future agenda item as well?
Oh, I absolutely. That would be interesting.
feel free to start the meeting.
It would have to be in person. It has to be in person. I got to move around when I talk and move my hands a lot. Nonetheless, let's get this meeting started. Welcome to the CVAC Public Safety Committee. I am Mayor Pro Tem Wayman Furman from the City of Indio. I'll be chairing this meeting. Today's date is Monday, June 14th, 2021. And could we have a roll call?
City of Blythe? City of Cathedral City?
Here.
City of Coachella? City of Desert Hot Springs? City of Indian Wells?
Here.
City of Indio?
Present.
City of La Quinta?
Present.
City of Palm Desert?
Present.
City of Palm Springs? City of Rancho Mirage?
Here.
County of Riverside and Agua Caliente?
Here.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Before we move on to the next item, being that we just finished roll call, could we go back to the last screen, please? Thank you. I just like to add that we have some new members. If you heard them on the roll call, that would be Agua Caliente Band of Korean Indians, Robert Bradbury, Emergency Service Manager, Riverside County Fire Deputy Chief Fish, and Palm Springs Councilmember Grace Gardner. So they'll be now on our committee. So welcome to our committee. So our next item is the Pledge of Allegiance. And if I could ask Councilmember Pena to lead us in the pledge of our great flag. I think you're on mute, sir. To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, sir. Now, I'd like to take this time to recognize San Bernardino Sheriff's Department Sergeant Dominic Baca, who was sadly taken away from his family while in the line of duty on Memorial Day. Sergeant Baca was a 17-year veteran of the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department. He was an Army veteran, a father of two young girls, and he will be sadly missed. I'd like to ask the committee and all attendants to join me in a moment of silence to honor Sergeant Baca. Thank you. We send our heartfelt condolences to his family, his community, and his department. Sergeant Baca is now 10-7. So moving on to the next item on our agenda, it's public comments for items on the agenda. This is the time and place for members of the public to address the Public Safety Committee on agenda items. Comments may be taken at this time. Present it, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Do we have any public comments for agenda items?
We did not receive any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Before we continue, can I make a request? There's a couple of people that are unmuted, and I've got a lot of feedback that's getting a little shrill. If everyone can mute, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's make sure we're all muted unless we're speaking. It gives us some little feedback there. Thank you. Okay, next is item number 5, chair, committee members, and CVAC staff comments. I like to go around the room before I make comments. Do we have any committee member comments?
I know we got some out there. How about staff comments?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. I wanted to draw your attention to the end of the month calendaring, particularly our General Assembly. For those of you who are relatively new to City Council, the General Assembly is CVAC's biggest meeting of the year, and all of you are voting members. It is going to be on June 28th at 6 on Zoom webinar. We did this last year, and it was perhaps our best attended Zoom meeting. It was quite a lot of interaction, and we're planning a very interactive agenda this year as well. So we look forward to seeing you all there at the end of the month, and we will be in touch with your cities to make sure that it's also on your calendars as well.
Erica, what time is that going to be on the 28th?
6 o'clock.
Thank you.
And much like last year, we're be a little bit of a friendly competition among cities, I'm sure, to keep the agenda lively.
That'll work. Do you have any other staff comments or committee member comments? Okay, I don't see any hands raised. Well, I'll go on to my comments. At this moment, I'd like the committee to join me in congratulating Palm Springs Police Chief Brian Reyes, who will be retiring this August. But this will be our last meeting with Chief Reyes as Palm Springs Police Department's police chief. Just a little background on Chief Reyes. Chief Reyes is a 27-year veteran of the Palm Springs Police Department. Chief Reyes proudly served his country in the United States Marine Corps prior to starting his career in law enforcement. Chief Reyes rose through the ranks at Palm Springs Police Department as an officer, as a detective, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, until his appointment as chief in February 2016. Chief Reyes is very active in our communities. You might see Chief Reyes participating in some of the great events in Palm Springs and also mentoring students at local schools, all the while still running a very busy police department. Chief Reyes' leadership skills, knowledge, and experience were paramount as he led his department and community through a very tough time after losing officers Gil Vega and Leslie Zarebny. Most recently, Chief Reyes also participated in many conversations regarding equality, policing, and race relations in our communities with elected officials, organizers, and community leaders. Believe me, I could keep going on. This will be our last meeting with Chief Reyes, and we appreciate you, Chief, and we thank you for your service to our community. So at this time, if Chief Reyes is on, if he wants to give a couple of words, this will be our last meeting with him, but it's not gonna be the last time seeing Chief Reyes because I'm not gonna let him leave. So Chief, the floor is yours.
I'll keep it very brief. You know, I appreciate your kind words. I've personally known you for a long time. I think I was actually an instructor of a class that you attended early on in your career. And I heard you with your comments, and you got 19 years in the profession. So if there's anybody that truly understands what we deal with day in and day out and the difficult time our profession is facing now in the foreseeable future, you understand. So I greatly appreciate everybody's support. I'm looking forward to the next chapter, whatever that may be. And I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. Just to piggyback on the Chief's comments, I started my career at College of the Desert, one of the first law enforcement academy classes at CLD, I believe in 1999. And some of our classes were held at Palm Springs Police Department. And between shifts, Chief Reyes was asked to come in with a couple of his partners to give us some lessons on traffic and some of those things. So your knowledge and wisdom over the years is greatly appreciated by myself and our community. So thank you, Chief.
And I think we all thank you so much, Chief, for all your service and leading us in a most memorable manner. Thank you.
And I also like to open the floor if folks want to make comments and congratulate the Chief.
Yeah, I would just say ditto. And hopefully you're going to stay in the Coachella Valley because we hate to have that brain drain leave us, and that you'll be around, and I'm sure you'll be active in whatever you do. Best wishes going forward to you and your family.
Congratulations, Chief, from Cathedral City. The entire council thanks you for being such a great neighbor, supporting Cathedral City Police Department. You know, we worked close together with you at Palm Springs and Cathedral City. And Chief Crum, I know he's on here now, and I'm sure he appreciated everything you did for the city as well. And just wish you the most happiness. And it's so important having a great police chief, and you were a great police chief for Palm Springs. Congratulations, sir.
Congratulations on a justly deserved retirement. We hope you really enjoy it. You've earned it.
I echo the sentiments and just want to thank you not only for your service within law enforcement, but your service to the community and the way that you improve community relations that cannot go under-recognized. And especially the way that you showed leadership in the demonstrations and the marches and the peaceful gatherings that you crafted and developed through that community organizing. So I just want to say thank you for your exemplary service to the community.
And thank you so much also for your community, your service to our entire country. As a Marine, we cannot thank you enough for providing all the freedoms that we enjoy every day.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chief. Now, moving on to the next item, which is ex officio updates. Eric, I don't know if we could bring in our chiefs, if our chiefs are online, and other personnel like to make comments as well before we move on to the item.
Chair, we can. And I know that Chief Crum was ready to provide an update as well. We want to move him first. And then if others would like to provide an update, if they could raise their hand or hit *9, then our team will move them along, move them to have audio and video controls.
Thank you. So the next item will be Chief Crum of the Cathedral City Police Department. He will be doing an update on their gang unit relaunching.
Yes, good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. And for Chief Reyes, enjoy retirement, my friend.
You're having some bad connection there, Chief.
I have gone into retirement and enjoyed it. Always be prepared to come back. Can you hear me now, sir?
You're breaking up and your screen's frozen right now.
Yeah, I may have a bad connection. Let me try something different here.
Well, we're waiting for Chief Crum. If the other ex officios would also like to raise their hand if anyone has an update, be happy to give you audio and video controls. Go ahead, Chief Crum.
Chief Crum, the floor is yours.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yeah, there's just a slight delay, but we can hear you.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Just a real quick update. I'm up in a mountain, so I'm probably having some reception issues up here. Just want to give a real quick update. When I was chief prior in Cathedral City, how about now?
Let's go ahead and try and let's see. Yes,
sir. Are you able to hear me, Chairman? Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick update to the committee regarding Cathedral City's new gang unit. We reinstated our gang unit on May 5th, and they've currently been in service for a little over a month now. The unit consists of a sergeant and two detectives currently. Our primary objectives with this gang unit will be prevention and intervention, investigation and apprehension, documentation and follow-up, and lastly, safety and security. Since this unit reinstated last month, they have made a total of 24 arrests, 16 of which are felony arrests, 8 being misdemeanor arrests. One specific case of interest that we were involved in was a carjacking in the city of Indio that occurred in the month of May. We were able to locate the individual responsible for that carjacking at our casino in Cathedral City. That individual led our patrol officers on a pursuit, at which point in time he was able to get away. Our gang that came in followed up on that case, and with the assistance of Indio Police Department's Street Crimes Unit, we were able to take that individual into custody for Indio's carjacking, as well as the crimes that were committed in the city of Cathedral City. So in a short amount of time, this unit has been extremely proactive and productive in assisting not only our city with additional safety and security, but also surrounding cities. And I want to make that known to all of the cities here that our gang unit is available should any of you need their assistance. And with that, Chairman, I will turn it back over to you.
Thanks for the update, Chief. I'd like to add on the Chief's comments on something as it pertains to the gang culture. Prevention and intervention is so big, and stopping and preventing gangs to mobilize in our communities and actually stopping them. So that's pretty big when our gang units are out there working with our young adults and our youth, preventing them from following in those footsteps. And it puts more of an emphasis on our jobs as policymakers to ensure that we're giving these programs to our youth and young adults and empowering our educators and our coaches to keep these young adults busy. So Chief Crum, thank you for what you do in our community and keeping us safe and your mutual aid with all of our other cities, and looking forward to working with you. I think we have some more ex officio comments. We have Deputy Chief Fish that's going to give us an update as well.
Good morning. Robert Fish, Deputy Chief Operations for the County Fire Department and CAL FIRE. I just thought I'd give a brief update on the fire that was in Pinion yesterday, because the smoke obviously impacted specifically La Quinta and Southern Coachella Valley pretty predominantly yesterday. The fire this morning is approximately 400 acres. It's 30% contained. Both the fire and the Forest Service are in unified command. Shared about 40% on the forest, the other part on the county lands, and good progress is being made. The forward progress of the fire has been stopped at this point. There was some structures that were damaged or destroyed. There's a damage assessment that's taking place. I don't have a whole lot of details on that, but right now the basic update is that forward progress of the fire has been stopped at about 400 acres. We have extensive amounts of crews and equipment that will be up there putting the remainder of the fire and doing patrol and mop up and line construction and reinforcement for the next 2 days. So unless there are any questions, I just want to provide the committee an update.
Thanks, Chief. I have a question. Do you have an update on the firefighter? I believe there's a firefighter that was injured. Do you have an update on that?
On the fire yesterday?
Yes.
No, I don't have any information on anybody being injured.
Okay.
If it was an injury, it's probably, and I don't want to speculate, but typically if I don't know about it, it's probably something fairly minor, like something in their eyes or, you know, okay, something along those lines. If it was a significant injury, we would have very specific details on that.
Great, thank you. I believe I've seen an injury somewhere, but hope he's all right if there's an injury. Thank you for the update.
Just one other thing, Chairman, is just a reminder to the committee and citizens in general, it's going to be extremely hot. We are just now coming into what would be considered peak fire season danger. Even though we live in a desert community, we are bordered by all kinds of lands that are prone to fire damage and catastrophic fire that impacts our citizens. Just be fire safe. And as we approach the 4th of July season, remember that illegal fireworks can be a significant cause of fire and human injury. And we just encourage everyone to be firewise and conduct themselves in an appropriate manner as we come into the holiday season. With that, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chief. Yes, it's going to be hot out there, triple digits for a while. So got to be safe out there and cleaning up those brushes and some of those things. So thank you for that update. Erica, do we have any further comments?
Chair, I don't see any other hands raised at this time.
Okay, no other ex officio updates. So thank you for that. The next item is consent calendar. Approve the May 10th, 2021 Public Safety Committee minutes. Do I have a motion for that?
I move approval.
Second, La Quinta.
We got a motion by Councilmember Sanders and a second by Councilmember Pena. And we get a consensus vote. By show of hands, aye.
I abstain.
Okay. We have one abstention with Councilmember Carnevale out of the Cathedral City. The motion passes. And we'll move on to discussion action item. It's an update on COVID-19 public health crisis. Bruce Barton, Director of Riverside County Emergency Management Department. Mr. Barton, the floor is yours. You're muted, sir.
Got it. You'd think after 18 months of living virtual life, I'd know when to unmute myself. So apologies there. good morning, everybody. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Thanks very much for inviting us to give this update on COVID-19. So just real quickly, our metrics, our case rate across the county currently stands at 1.5 per 100,000 population. Our overall positivity is 1.1%, which is well down. And our healthcare equity positivity for those healthcare equity areas is 1.2%. Just as a comparison, the state case rate is at 1.8 per 100,000. The vaccination campaign continues to move forward. That's pretty much the majority of the public health operation right now. As far as vaccination progress in the county of Riverside, 12 or older, partially vaccinated, we have 51%. 12 or older, fully vaccinated, we're at 42.1%. 18 or older, partially vaccinated, we're at 53.9%. 18 or older, fully vaccinated, we're at 45.4%. For our particularly vulnerable population, which is 65 or older, partially vaccinated, we have 72.4%, and fully vaccinated, we have 63.3%. So those high vaccination numbers, clearly in the 65 or older, is directly linked to our decrease in hospitalizations, admits, and deaths across the county. The numbers are actually even higher for the Coachella Valley, particularly because the hospitality industry out there and the agricultural workers have been targeted by the public health campaign and all of our partner agencies, including Desert Healthcare District. The hospitals, particularly Eisenhower Hospital, has been very vigorously vaccinating everybody out there and all of the community-based organizations that have been partnering with our county public health department to take care of those vulnerable populations, particularly in those equity or the lower quartile, what we call quartile one areas. Our hospitalizations are well down now. We have across the entire county in our 17 acute care hospitals, 33 COVID positive that are hospitalized. That's down from the high the second week of January, which was 1,675. That same week, we saw about 380 people in the ICU, and now we have only 9 people in the ICU. So our numbers are well down. and under control at this point in time. I won't bury the lead. Tomorrow is June 15th, an auspicious date. The state of California, the governor, and California Department of Public Health are lifting all restrictions and the blueprint for safer reopening. So that means the masking will go away, the social distancing will go away, all of those restrictions will go away, with the exception of large events, particularly indoor events that are over 5,000 people. The attendees must be vaccinated or have a negative test, or they must mask. For outdoor large events, and those are defined as over 10,000 attendees, the rule of the guidelines from the state will be the same, which is they must be vaccinated, they need a negative test, or they need a mask. Across the board, you know, one of the questions is, well, how do you ensure that? So self-attestation is really going to be the methodology. In other words, the honor system. There are different discussions going on as far as, do I have to have a vaccination card? Do I need to show that? But the state's position has been self-attestation is really going to be what drives most of that. Another question we get asked is, will the county do anything different than what the state is doing? And at this point, we will not be doing anything different than what the state is doing. Although our public health department remains a resource, we will continue to be moving forward vigorously with the vaccination campaign, particularly in those populations that remain vulnerable. These are the folks that may have been, you know, shut into their homes for whatever reason, or are not able to get out and get the vaccination at this point. We will continue to field mobile teams that will target those areas, and as well as work with all of our providers in the healthcare system, really the whole
I think we're losing you there. We lost your connection. The internet is not working good with us today. You froze on us, sir. Okay.
Chair, I'll reach out to him by email as well real quick and see if maybe we can alert him.
Yeah. And do we want to move on to the next item, or
he is our speaker for item B as well, but if you'd like, we can move to item C for the sake of time, and we can come back if that is the chair's preference.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll keep moving on. It's these are all informational, so we'll move on to
he just re-arrived. It is chair's discretion.
Yeah, we'll let him go ahead and continue. Mr. Barton, you're on mute, and we'll let you go ahead and continue that.
Okay, apologize. I had made it through most of the presentation anyway, and if there are any additional questions, please, I'm available for any questions that anybody may have.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Barton? Oh, that was a great update. A lot of information, good information that you reported on. So thank you. Thank you for the hard work that you're doing. And that was really good information, especially some of the folks down here in the Coachella Valley and some of those hard to reach places to see that their numbers are up in vaccinations. That's great to slow the spread of this COVID-19. So thank you. And we'll move on to item B, and that's Riverside County's coordination response to asylum seekers. Erica.
Thank you, Chair, and Director Barton will be providing this update. This is at the request of some committee members. At your last meeting, it was this item was requested as far as an update on the asylum seekers that are making their way to Riverside County and what the impact maybe in our community. So Director Barton, thank you so much for a two presentation meeting.
You bet, no worries. So we have been getting these individuals which are asylum, seeking asylum into the country. This particular group that we see coming in, they're coming in through from Arizona through the Blythe station. They're coming up from El Centro into the Indio station and into Murrieta from San Diego. These are folks that are crossing what we call, they're entering without inspection. So they're not coming through a border patrol. So these are folks coming across the border that are being apprehended, and CBP does not have the facilities to be able to take care of them. So they were going to be releasing them out of these stations. So the county, as we did 2 years ago, quickly put together a response to be able to mitigate the release of these folks onto the street. It was particularly important to do that with COVID continuing to be prevalent. So about a third of these folks that have come through, we've had 2,547 to date that have come through. Of those, about 1,228 have either been exposed or tested positive for COVID. We are doing that testing when they come in. We greet them, we test them, do that screening, and then we put them into an isolation quarantine hotel if they test positive. And that's, so once again, that's been 1,228. As of today, we only have seven that are in isolation quarantine, and there are none of them that are currently in shelters. So if they don't test positive, then they're going over, most of them are going, particularly in the Coachella Valley, they're going over to the Galilee Center where they're being provided some services and support. These folks come through, they do, really don't want to stay in Riverside County, and they want to get through and go to wherever their ultimate destination is to await their immigration hearing for their request for asylum. And they're normally, you know, if they haven't tested positive for COVID and have to go in isolation quarantine, they're here like maybe 1 to 3 days. And that's really an effective operation that's really put on by Galilee Center and supported by the county, our homeless housing prevention and workforce solutions department. So we've continued to see these come through. They have dropped off significantly. We have not seen people come through the last several days. And the reason for that is the majority of them that are coming through are being actually returned under Title 42, which is a presidential executive directive that was put in place by the Trump administration. So what we are hearing is that that is probably going to be that executive direction under Title 42 is in all likelihood going to be reversed by the Biden administration. It's probably not a question of whether it's going to happen. It's a question of when. And nobody can give us really specific details for that. It could be around the end of this month. It could be into July. But it is the reversal of Title 42 is imminent, which means we will see additional releases, probably in higher numbers, coming into Riverside County. So in preparation for that, to deal with what we have in place, and also the fact that it's always been in the conversation that Title 42 may go away, we have solicited mutual aid from the state. The state has come down. The California Department of Public Health has come down. The Cal OES has come down. CDSS, the Department of Social Services, has come down. And they have helped us secure the hotel rooms, secure the transportation, the wraparound services for these individuals. And they have also stood up a hub in the city of Indio where we are taking these folks. They're being medically screened. They are being tested. They are being asked if they will take the COVID vaccine, and some of them have. And that has been stood up now for probably, I think, about 5-6 weeks that we've had that stood up. Because we have lower numbers, they were talking about it going into basically a warm status, because we don't have a lot of folks coming through, and in all likelihood is going to happen in the next week or so, with the full knowledge that if Title 42 goes away, or when it goes away, they will stand that back up and we'll be able to have those services in place and continue to get that support from the state. So I know this is an issue on many fronts. I would ask everybody to keep in mind that none of us here created this situation. We are providing these safety net services as the county with our partner cities, with our partner CBOs, with our partners at the state, because if we don't do this, these people will be released on the street. And that's been made very clear to us. And that is actually, that is what is happening in the county of San Diego. So we're doing, you know, there's a humanitarian side to this, of course. So there's a real need here for these folks. Like I said, many of which don't have any intention of staying here in Riverside County. But the other piece of it is if we get street releases and they'd be releasing them mostly at transportation hubs, what is going to be the impact on our communities here in Riverside County? And we want to do everything we can to mitigate any potential impacts on our communities and on our residents. So that's where we are at this point in time, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Yes, sir.
You mentioned state funding. Any word on federal funding? We hear the news. We hear news that they're kicking down money. When and where, I don't know. But have they been specific to help us support this?
Yeah, there has not been any specific federal funding that has come down to support immigration surge. There has been some through FEMA. There has been some emergency shelter and feeding program dollars that have come down, and the county and our county departments have tapped into that, as well as our community-based organizations, our NGOs like Galilee Center, have been able to tap into that so that we can support their operations. If they are, you know, end up being COVID positive, we're tapping into the COVID funding that the county has received to help pay for that. But there is a gap there for some of that that we are looking forward to a release of federal funding specific for immigration surge. We would think that if the current administration reverses Title 42, that there would have to be funding that comes with that support state, federal, or state, county, and local government response to this.
Thank you. Councilmember Smotters, you have a question?
I do. When you talk about Title 42 being reversed, how is that going to impact any testing that might take place for COVID, or will testing even occur? And will the people not be turned away or turned back, and will they just be walking across and out on the street, or will there be any kind of screening of any sort taking place?
So I'll try to take that in pieces. So if Title 42 goes away, that means the people that come across the border that get apprehended would then not be returned. They will then sit, you know, they'll fill up these border patrol stations that are as far away as Texas and Arizona, because they're actually flying them into San Diego from there when they get too many people there. So they'll swell. It is reasonable to assume that once word gets out that they're going to come across the border and they're not going to be returned, more of them are going to come. Now that's me connecting the dots there, right? That's just an opinion, but it would probably see a surge. And then as they came across, they would go to the border patrol stations, and then they would be released through our stations. That's their only option they have. We would continue to do what we're doing. So if they got released, we would continue to meet them, screen them, test them, and continue to have the hub stood up, and maybe even have another hub stood up if need be, probably in Western Riverside County, to accommodate, you know, what we would see then coming up from San Diego. As far as testing, medical screening, this particular group of people, the ones that come across the border and are just being apprehended, they're not coming through one of the border inspection sites. The federal government's not doing anything to screen them or test them or anything else. If they were, we wouldn't have to be doing this, and they could be taking care of the isolation quarantine piece while they're in federal custody. They've made it very clear they are not going to do that. So that really, it falls then to us as where, you know, we're where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. Us at the county, you as the cities, And so we're going to continue to need to field this kind of an operation to try to mitigate those impacts. But it would be our intention to continue to test, continue to do isolation quarantine. But a lot of that is going to depend too on what kind of numbers are we talking about? How big are they? How many? Because, you know, even our operation that we have stood up with state support has, you know, only a certain amount of capacity that we would be able to deal with.
So when these facilities are overflowing, then people are flown into San Diego?
Yeah, that's what's been happening is Border Patrol and ICE have been flying them from Texas, from Arizona into San Diego. There's a very large federal presence on the ground in San Diego. It's really the only thing, the federal government, as far as their response, it's really about the kids, not about the adults. So they've set up these centers. One's down at the convention center in San Diego. Another one is at Pomona at the Fairplex. Another one is at the Long Beach Convention Center, where they're taking the kids in that are the unaccompanied minors, and they're taking care of them, but they're not really taking care of the adults. So they're flying them in to these Border Patrol stations because, you know, they've got to take them out of these hubs that are in Texas and in Arizona that are overflowing, and they've got to spread them out to their collateral circulation, which is wherever one of their Border Patrol stations ends up being. So if you're an area that has a Border Patrol station, you're going to end up getting groups of these individuals that would ultimately be released onto the street unless we field the operation we're fielding to try to, you know, mitigate the impacts that may have.
Okay, so when you say released onto the streets, I know you mentioned Galilee Center, and there are probably a couple of other centers or churches or facilities that are welcoming them. But when you say released onto the street, does that literally mean walking out the front door and there they are in whatever community they choose to, where they choose to end up?
If we were not fielding the operation that we are, they would be loading them up on buses. They'd be driving them to transportation hubs, such as Greyhound bus stations, as one example. And they would be offloading bus loads of them there for them to then arrange their own transportation and be off to wherever they were going to go. They were actually doing that in Blythe before we put this operation into, you know, and poor Blythe, you know, they don't have, you know, they're releasing them out there at the Greyhound station, and they don't have, you know, a lot of resources out there to be able to deal with it. And, you know, so that's why we have to field the operation that we are fielding.
So would it seem that some of these people who are just dropped off or walk out the door will also end up into the homeless communities?
It's certainly possible. It is certainly possible. I mean, basically, they would be homeless unless they have the ability to arrange their own transportation and be off to the destination of their choice. That's where the CBOs come in, right? They're coming in with that humanitarian mission to screen them, to see what travel arrangements they have. And if they haven't made them, then they're assisting them with doing those travel arrangements so they can be off to where they want to go. It's better for them. It's better for us, right? So that's the way it works. The problem is, right, is now you have this COVID piece that's part of this. And if we don't screen them, don't test them and separate who's COVID positive or exposed, then very quickly our NGO shelters that are taking these people in, even if they're only staying 1 to 3 days, are going to have, you know, outbreaks of COVID. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to mitigate as well.
Okay, I appreciate your answers because I ask a lot of questions, as you all know, because I'm asked a lot of questions. Sure. And it's good for clarification. You know, it's better that people are informed of what to expect and how soon to expect it and how these situations are dealt with. So I appreciate all your efforts, and I know we all appreciate all the information you're bringing to us. So thank you again. Just stay safe.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bruce, a quick question. The asylum seekers that come over here, would you say the majority of them have a destination, a relative, a friend, some connection over here? And if so, wouldn't it be better to help them to get to that destination rather than saying, hey, you're going to Blythe, you're going to Cathedral City or Riverside? If you have an uncle or parent, you know, in Texas, why can't we, you know, direct them there? At least that would take care of them off the streets. And I'm sure there's some that have no direction. They just wanted to come to America and take the chance, and we could deal with that too. But is there a percentage that they do have a destination?
So all of them, as a condition of seeking asylum, have to have a sponsor in the U.S. and they have to have an address ultimately. And, you know, that's what we're trying to move them on to. The question would be, when they come into these larger hubs like Texas and Arizona, wouldn't it be better just to send them there? The answer from the federal government, and I'll just be upfront, I don't like it, is they don't have the capability to be able to do that. They don't have the network to be able to do it. They don't have the resources to be able to do it. So they push it out to their local border patrol stations, who also don't have the capability to do it. They'd just be dropping them off at the station. So, I mean, it's a tough situation. I don't know how many administrations we've had that haven't known how to really deal with the whole immigration piece. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to us, where the rubber meets the road, and we're going to continue to try to field the operation that we can to deal with the humanitarian side as well as mitigate the impacts on communities.
It's quite a situation. Thank you, Bruce.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Barton, for your report, and thank you for the collaborative effort with Border Patrol, our local cities, our local agencies, and especially our nonprofits, who are doing a lot of work, who sometimes don't get recognized enough for some of their efforts, because like you said, it is a humanitarian effort. And when the federal government is up in DC doing what they're doing, folks are still coming in, and we're still working to try to get them the services they need, get them screened, get them vaccinated, fed, and onto their destination. And that's a tough effort, and there's a lot of organizing and collaborative effort amongst the cities and departments. So thank you for your efforts. And that is a informational item. So we'll move on to item number C, letter C, which is continued conversation on race, diversity, and policing. Erica, be handling this.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And my thanks to both you and former Chair Pena, who participated in our ad hoc committee. So this will kind of give a little bit of a recap of this topic. As many of you know, this has been a reoccurring item on the agenda for about the last year. So we'll kind of go through the timeline here for the slide. In June is kind of last summer is really when this started. You'll recall that the committee had a roundtable discussion with many of our police chiefs. And at the time, there was a draft resolution that was presented to you, and it sparked quite a bit of feedback. And the response from the committee was that this was an item that really needed to be discussed further at the ad hoc level. So over the summer of last year, we had an ad hoc committee that met, that also included council member Beeman Jacinto out of Coachella and Mayor Christy Holsage from Palm Springs. That at the same time, the cities and the county were holding listening sessions, getting community feedback on the topics related to race, diversity, and policing. And those conversations varied from community to community. In the fall, we presented some updates to you. The Public Safety Committee drafted a resolution, and that was adopted by our executive committee in December. In February, your agenda included an update from the county. The county has done quite a bit of meetings on this topic and did do a data summary that was provided to the committee as well. At your last meeting in May, and the reason this item is back, is there were some questions about what next steps, if any, the CVAG Public Safety Committee should be taking. So based on the May direction, we did meet with the ad hoc committee, I guess about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, and we looked at some options. So the first option that was discussed was looking at a valley-wide survey. Is this something that CVAG wants to lead with data reports? There is some range of options that staff has explored, initially that go up to a little over $30,000 based on initial estimates. I'd warn that these are some initial estimates. And also as part of the conversation, there was a conversation about cost. CVAG does not have in its budget a line item for this. So if this was something to be pursued, it'd have to be a discussion of how that cost would be covered. We've also discussed Teletown Hall, which is a format that's been used by some of our partnering agencies. RCTC has done this, that could spark a conversation by cold calling folks across the county or across the CVAG area, as well as offering the phone number for folks to participate in kind of a telephone town hall. There's also some discussions at the ad hoc level about in-person meetings, as well as whether a panel discussion may want to be led in partnership with either the county or cities. So at this point, the ad hoc committee did discuss these items, and the feedback was to gather additional information over the summer from member jurisdictions and return this to you all in the fall when CVAG's committee meetings resume for further discussions. So that kind of provides a little bit of a summary of where we're at. Just we're offering this item at the request of you to provide this as an item for discussion. And if there's additional direction, otherwise the direction from the ad hoc, as recommended by the ad hoc committee, is before you. Chair, that completes my brief presentation, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Do we have any questions for staff? No questions for staff. I'd like to add on a little bit. I think these conversations are always evolving and will always happen, but right now, what's our main reason for doing this now, the urgency? And I think over this last year, there's been a lot of discussions with our law enforcement and public safety communities, our organizers, our councils. And I think at this point, it would be just a great idea to return back to your own cities and jurisdictions and see what's going on, see the changes that have been made. I know in Indio, there's different things that we're doing now. The Sheriff's Department has done things online to give access to, reports and different agendas and goals. All of our departments, Cathedral City, Palm Springs, Desert Hot Springs, have listening sessions with their communities, have chief advisory committees. So I like folks to go back and see what's going on in our respective cities and jurisdictions. And when we return, we could give updates at that point. And I see that would be the best direction for us to go. And this is not the bottom line, but it is also cost effective when we could go back to our own communities and report back to our committee what we're doing. And if there needs to be changes or things need to evolve, which they always do sometimes, we can always do that, or we could bring this back to our committee. But I think we've done a great job. Our resolution, I think, was great. It was a collaborative effort amongst the ad hoc and the committee. So I'm very proud of that. And I'm very proud to have worked with organizers, elected officials, community leaders, our public safety personnel. And this was just a time in our history that I think we have to make it an educational moment moving forward. And so just thank you for all the hard work. Thank you to staff and thank you for the committee for that. So that is just a discussion and provide direction. So I will move on to our next item, which is just information. It's our attendance record, which is included in your packet. Member survey on CVAG meetings in post-COVID environment. And item C is meeting schedule for fiscal year 2021 and 22. And do you have any questions or comments on any of those items? I don't see any. All right.
Quick question for staff. I know that going forward, we're not going to be meeting in July or August, but are we looking at meeting in person again? I know that that's still a conversation that's being discussed at CVAG, whether it's going to be in person going forward or we're going to be doing Zoom.
Thank you, Councilmember Pena. The item actually refers to 9B on your agenda. We're going to be asking our members about the meeting logistics. Certainly through this month, we are planning to meet by Zoom in September. There are certainly benefits when you have a jurisdiction, a geography as large as CBAGS, of meeting in person. I'm sorry, meeting online as well as meeting in person. And so we're gonna be circulating a survey to our members and talking to them about options for moving forward. So at this point, we're asking you to save the date and time, and we will have to finalize logistics a little closer to September.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Catania has a question.
Wondering, it was struggling to unmute. It was just challenging there. I was just wondering, since we're going to have some downtime in between meetings, if perhaps that would be a time to maximize or create some ad hoc committees to be able to narrow down or maybe look at some of the ideas. I completely think that would be a great idea to come back to our local communities, who would be most effective at understanding the needs of our community. And I think that it would be a good time to start maybe framing what some of those could include or how to do proper outreach to increase the diversity of participants to get to some meaningful change and meaningful dialogue in these listening sessions. Just wondering if what meaningful impact we can do in the meantime, because obviously if we're not meeting for a while, what can we do to be much more productive when we do resume?
Yeah, I think what it's the difficulty there is when we go dark, a lot of folks are vacationing or out of town. Nonetheless, we could still work with staff and see if we could have, you know, a committee meeting to work on some of those things. Nonetheless, like I mentioned earlier, I think this is a good time to go back to our communities. And if there are requests, whether it's communication with our departments. I think our public safety committee should be a mechanism for folks to come with concerns or communication or you know, just have that engagement. I think we are that mechanism. So it is open. Nonetheless, I know it's hard with the time of our meetings, but if there are questions, comments, and concerns from the community and that need to be addressed, I have no problem working on a special ad hoc committee to address those concerns. So I think that's something we could work with staff and communicate, you know, in these next coming months.
I agree, Mr. Chair. If there's an issue that comes up, obviously the ad hoc committee can address that. We can arrange a meeting. You know, certainly Zoom has made it a lot easier to get together, whether we're traveling or not, and I would be willing to meet as well too.
We have it. So we'll move on to agenda item number 10, which is public comments on non-agenda items. If the public has any comments on non-agenda items, there's 2 minute time allotted for comments. Do we have any requests or comments, Erica?
Sure, I don't see any hands raised and we did not receive anything by writing.
All righty. Thank you. Well, we'll move on to announcements, our upcoming meetings. Our next meeting for the Public Safety Committee will be held on Monday, September 13, 2021 at 9 a.m., either Zoom, webinar, or in person. The next meeting of the Executive Committee will be held Monday, June 28, 2021 with the closed session at 4 p.m. and regular session at 4:30 p.m. via Zoom webinar. The next meeting of the General Assembly will be held Monday, June 28th, save the date, June 28th, 2021 at 6 p.m. via Zoom webinar. Before we adjourn, do we have any further comments, questions, or concerns before we adjourn the meeting? Being I don't see any, I just once again want to send our condolences to San Bernardino County Sheriff Sergeant Vaca's family and the community of San Bernardino, and also congratulations to Chief Reyes as he retires, and this will be our last meeting. The time is 10:05 and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.